And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
35 years ago around the United States, the first Earth Day was held, and millions of people rallied then to protect the Earth. The issues then were amazingly similar to those now, as we hear the debate about oil, about wilderness, forests, and water. But there are some enormous differences. Today, we explore the status of planet Earth and how the movement to preserve Mother Earth is now widely recognized as a struggle for survival with some enormous differences. You are in for some amazing news when we return with your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Happy Earth Day! It's hard, and to some, somewhat painful to admit, that Earth Day is 35 years old. Many of you listening grew up learning about Earth Day in grade school. And many of you were there during Earth Day 1. I was, as a biologist, student, and naturalist. And it was great news then, an exciting and yet challenging time. Earth Day grew from an idea that Senator Gaylord Nelson from Wisconsin had back in 1962. He noticed a lot of passion for the land, the forests, the wildlife, but very little in his fellow legislators in Washington. He brought his concern to the White House and got as far as Robert Kennedy, the president's brother, who liked the idea. In September 1963, President Kennedy went on a 5-day tour to bring attention to the Earth, but his efforts died with him a few months later. In 1969, during one of the most divisive years of the Vietnam War, Senator Nelson noted the teach-ins that were occurring on campuses across America, and he envisioned a similar event for the Earth. A public announcement and a few timely articles launched a passion for the idea on campuses around the country. With Dennis Hayes brought in to organize the event, April 22, 1970, lives now as a day that the environmental movement was launched into the American psyche. 2 years later, the message of limits was brought home as Americans queued up in endless lines creeping along to the gas pump. The oil embargo brought home the effect oil and the lack of oil could have on America's security. In the last 35 years, much has changed due to those early awakenings to the Earth and our relationship with it. Earth Day was above all else about health, because we all know without health, life is diminished. The message that a healthy environment translates directly into the possibility of a healthy life, that message keeps appearing every day of our lives. We now understand that toxins in our air, whether they be from chimneys or cigarettes, will hurt us. We know that chemicals in our drinking water can affect our health, our children, directly. We know that dumping chemicals onto the land can have huge consequences for those who then live in that environment. We are beginning to really understand that things that hurt the environment when compounded can have catastrophic effects. As we witness the depletion of our oceans, the changes in our weather, the literal rising of the Earth's oceans due to our continued use of oil for our energy and transportation, Earth Day 35 suddenly takes on great significance. To many of us, we wonder, how is it that we find ourselves still struggling over some of the same issues? As we speak, the House is debating the President's energy bill, a bill that is offering billions of dollars of tax breaks to the oil industry to create an even greater dependence on oil, and to many, thereby literally threatening our national security. It's difficult for many, including now increasing numbers within his own party, to understand why. The causes are many. To help us understand the real roots of this dilemma, I'm going to take us back in time. The year is 1992. A presidential campaign is being waged between the president's father, then President George Herbert Walker Bush, and the young firebrand from Arkansas, Bill Clinton. At the forefront of the effort to defeat the young governor was the newly emerged spokesman for the new right, none other than Rush Limbaugh. Here is a clip from the Rush Limbaugh show in which Rush is telling his audience the way it is when it comes to the environment.
The environmentalist wackos are at it again. It's a recurring theme. You think that you've beaten them back. You think that you have pummeled them into dormancy, and they surface again on you. And so it has happened again. There's a major, major conference of science. So here we go again, folks. The American Association for the Advancement of Science has found this. The Earth's land, water, and cropland are all disappearing. And that's not all. There's even worse news. If we don't slash world population from 5.5 billion to 2 billion or fewer by the year 2100, we're all dead. We've got 5 billion people in the world now. Do we not? 5 billion people. Now, the population projections are that we're going to have even more people by the year 2100. But whatever number we have more than today, let's say we add another billion just for the hell of it. I would probably be more than that, but let's say we do. Let's say it's 6 billion. Keep these, since most of the American people are stupid, as it has been postulated on this show, let's use simple numbers. We got 6 billion people living on the Earth in 2100. But we can't have that many. We can only have 2 billion. The Earth can only support 2 billion people in the future because it's going to run out of water, fossil fuels, cropland, all of that. The guy who's in charge of this is a guy named David Pimentel, and he's an ecologist at Cornell. And he says if the world's current population trends continue, we face a worldwide scenario. Now, here he goes. This is his words. Absolute misery, poverty, disease, and starvation. He furthermore states, quote, there is no way out of it. There are just insufficient resources for these people of the future to live like we do today. There are no technological solutions to be found. We can never replace fossil fuel. I take you back to 1968, the population bomb, Dr. Paul Ehrlich. Not one claim, not one prediction was even close to true. Not one prediction made in that book, and they were as dire as this guy's predictions. And not one of them has even come close to being borne out. I would like to make this counter statement, opinion as fact. I'll bet you I can find another scientist out there who will state that this world could support 15 billion people. That this world could support 20 billion people. Because I'm going to tell you something, folks. We don't have a shortage of resources. Listen very carefully. We do not have a shortage of resources. The people who predicted the Earth couldn't stand 1 billion people were wrong. There were people who said we couldn't support 2 billion people. They said we couldn't support 3. We're supporting 5 billion people, and we can support 3 times this much. This population scare is just the next crisis. Everything's over. It's time to cash in the chips and check out. Let me give you a little fact. Tell you what the facts of this thing are. You could take the entire population of the world today, group them as though they were families of four, and put them in 1,500 square foot homes. And you could fit all those homes inside a geographic area the size of the state of Texas. These are mathematic figures. These are scientific calculations. This is not somebody guessing, not somebody's opinion. Now, let me ask you this. If the world's population lived in Texas, do you think there'd be any starvation? There would not be. You know why? Because there's capitalism in the United States. Our problem is not a shortage of resources. Our problem is not the unequal distribution of resources. Our problem, as I so state in my first book, The Way Things Ought to Be, our problem is the unequal distribution of capitalism. And once again, look at what the environmental wacko's solution to their imagined crisis is. A rollback of lifestyles to the days of poverty for all. Peasantry for all. to roll back civilized advances so that we all are nothing more than the equivalent of those living in the frozen tundra of the great Northeast in the 1400s, or even further. And it's not necessary. You couple that with Vice President Al Gore saying the automobile is the single biggest threat to mankind that we've ever had. This is why the guys can say they're scientists and all this, but they cannot make these predictions because every prediction in the past about what an explosion of people and population this planet would cause to happen have not even come close to the mark. In fact, we haven't begun, my friends, to tap the resources at this planet. Look at trees. We got more trees now than we had when we signed the Declaration of Independence. Well, that's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be destroying all this forest land. It's all just hocus-pocus, typical liberal scare-mongering and crisis creation. We'll be back with more of your calls after this.
Amazingly, 13 years later, both Rush and Bush are still on message. But the wacko environmental nuts have been vindicated. We now live in the world of the end of oil, the consequences of overpopulation, and most dramatically, the emergence of a consumer-driven Chinese economy that, well, threatens our very existence. It's easy to understand how we are where we are when we realize that that message has been hammered out into the American public every single day since then. The environmental movement has been demonized, pilloried, attacked, and diminished in order to support the unlimited exploitation of resources that Rush and those who made him glorified as the raison d'etre of an unfettered capitalist dream. Earth Day 35 is dedicated to protect our children and our future. Today, we embrace the theme, and as you will see, bring new meaning to that concept. To all of you who have celebrated each Earth Day from its beginning, I say, we have won the debate. All that we have championed has been right all along, and we need now to shake off all the slime and sludge that has been flung at us every day, emerge fresh, new, clean, and knowing that we were right all along, and now unite for the challenge ahead, for the challenges are now in our face due to the childishness of the likes of Limbaugh and his ditto heads. In truth, they are becoming inconsequential. Now we must celebrate the insight, truth, and wisdom, and the freedom to unite, knowing the challenges before us. To those who still dally, I quote a proverb written just for you, perhaps thousands of years ago. If you don't change your course, you may end up where you're going. For the rest of us, celebrate the glory of our struggle. Unite in our human mission to save ourselves as well as our planet Earth. For the future of our economy relies on a new energy future. In a moment, we return with a clear message about America's national security from a man whose job it was to protect it in the real world of power. Your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.